Well, when it comes to not getting turned down, if you get stuck in the cycle of pride, you'll end up turning yourself off and then feeling like you're awesome. So let's not do that. Well, hello everybody. This is Stephen Reed from Music and Ministry. We are back today continuing our deep dive into the subject of how to not get turned off on your soundboard and be on the team that you're on. And it's unfortunately the reality in many churches across America and most of the world where people are up there pouring out their heart to the Lord, and yet we can't hear what it is that we see. And we have talked a lot about the reasons why that is, but the main reason is that they're not playing the right part at the right time with the right sound. And then we've gone over these six reasons why you wouldn't know what that is, or you think you know what it is and you don't actually. And the number one reason is pride. And that's one we're going to talk quite a bit about today. And it's a very touchy subject. And so I'm hopeful that I will not offend you, or at least that I will share with you the truth and love. And it will definitely be challenging. And it will move you forward. So let's see how that goes. Number two is going to be ignorance. Number three is going to be bad systems, which we spent a lot of time on today. And we will continue because it's a big deal. You can't get past most of those. Number four is going to be deception, which we'll talk a lot about today. Number five is going to be a current inability, meaning that you just don't know something that you need to get better, either through practice, or it is something that we just as humans can't do because we're humans and we're not machines. And then number six is going to be willingness. Are you willing to do it? Are you not willing to do it? That is a huge factor in whether or not things are going to get done. So all of them are intertwined and they have the relationship with each other. And I mention them pretty much every time because they're super important. But I've kind of glanced over the first one as we've gone by and just said it's a big deal. And it is a big deal. It's the biggest deal. And we all deal with it and it causes a lot of issues. And it comes when we get into this moment of where we do everything that we know how to do. We come to the moment where we're going to lead worship and it does not go like we thought it would. And it is in that moment where what we thought and where we're at, there's this gap in between and our pride gets involved and we're like, ah, and we'll either feel like we're awful and worship leaders, we have a terrible habit or reputation of just being super sensitive. And that's because we have these issues, this pride issue. I want to be this good. I see myself being this good. And then when I'm not this good, then we go from potentially being overly excited about I'm awesome to then I'm not as good as I thought it was. Oh, I'm a worm and I'm terrible. And so when anybody says anything and pastors walk on eggshells around most worship leaders to say anything because they get so upset, and I'm going to say some things today that will probably get you a little upset. But we're going to, again, truth and love and try and help get past these things, because pride, for the most part, is an overcompensation for our insecurities. And so when we get to that moment where we're not as good as we thought we were, we will do one of two things. We will either humble ourselves and say, you know what? Yeah, okay, that stinks. And usually in that humbling process is that downward spiral of like, I'm terrible, I'm nothing. And I've been there. I have certainly like wanted to throw my guitar in the ocean and just be like, let's go sell insurance and do something else because yeah, I'm not as awesome as I thought I was. Right. So it took a minute to recover from that. And then you're like, you know what? I still love playing guitar. I'm not terrible. I'm okay, but I need to get better. Like I'm not where I thought I was, but I can see I could practice and I could get better. Maybe I can't even get to this level, but I know I can get to this level and I'm good with that. Right. And so after that humbling process, and I can either humble myself or I can be humiliated. Those are the two main ways that you counteract pride. And I've had both of them happen. And I'm much more of a fan of humbling myself versus being humiliated. It is at that point where I then decide, okay, how am I going to get to the place where I see myself wanting to be there? What you do in that moment really can change the trajectory of your life, your ministry, because you can either work to get better, right, and put in the time and put in the effort, or you can start to take some shortcuts in the sense of this makes me look like I'm better. Or you can find people who will tell you what it is that you want to hear. And sometimes you can even get stuck in this loop where you then become self-deceived to where you believe that you are as good as you want to be, even though You kind of know that you're not, but you think that you are. And I am describing in general some very specific habits that we do as worship teams. And so I kind of want to get into that, because a lot of the things that we do as worship teams are based on things that are not real, that are a result of that pride cycle of what I'm talking about. And these moments where you try something, it's not as good as you would like it to be, and then you start doing things to achieve that. And then if you don't realize that that's what's happening out there, other people then try to copy that. And then we just get this revolving cycle of everybody's trying to live up to this fanciful idea of what it is. And nobody is actually as good as they say they are. And so then we have built these bad systems based on this cycle of pride that is causing a problem. So I would encourage you, just in general, like when you reach that moment where you find this is it, I'm ignorant. Number two, I'm ignorant. Like, I don't know how to get any better. You have to be careful in those moments. All right, so let me give you some examples. And again, try not to offend anybody, but we're going to truth and love here. So as I mentioned a lot, we do almost everything that we do as worship teams based on our worship recordings. And I keep saying it, I'll say it again. Those are not real. They were not recorded live. If they even were recorded, they were completely re-recorded, or maybe the drums were kept. But they have, a lot of times these days, pre-recorded all of that. And it's not like they re-record like 10% or 20%. It's like 90%, 99% are being completely re-recorded, fixed, edited, enhanced, taken from a live mono environment and put into a stereo environment. And even if they were recorded live, those are still not like Sunday service meetings. Those are special events, recording events where all of the people who come to church because it's the church nearby and who they love the kids ministry and maybe they want to hear the pastor speak and tolerate the worship team, those people don't show up on those nights. And so you have this selective group of people who love to worship. There's no sermon that night. There's no children's care. It's a special event. And we watch that and we think, wow, that church is so amazing. Except for that's not a church. The people that you're listening to may not be a church. And so we then try to replicate that in our church and don't realize that how much of that has been altered or faked. And to the point where then we are continuing in that folly. All right, now, why did they do that? And the answer is because when they made their first recording, they did like I did when I made our first church recording. We went back and listened to it and we're like, man, that was such an anointed service. Why does the music sound so bad? And so then we're like, well, I don't want to put this out in front of other people because they're going to say, oh, well, they're not very good. And so then that's our pride talking. Why won't we just offer out to them what it is that we actually did, even though it was very successful in the sense of the presence of the Lord, people were worshiping, people were affected, is because of that pride. And so then when we're in that moment, rather than going and trying again, which we did, and it was only a little bit better, and we realized, this just isn't even possible. Like, this isn't going to sound good. And so that's when deception comes in. And so rather than just saying, oh, okay, this is what live recordings are, we then buy into, well, this is what everybody else does. And then you start to go in and you start to enhance and fix and make things sound like they were not. And so unfortunately, that's deception. And if we were to say like, hey, this is a recording and we fixed all these things, okay, then that's more honesty, but then it would still be have a problem in transferring that into. And so where the deception really affects us is because we think it's live and it was real and even the results were real, which are unfortunately sometimes faked as well. You're like, oh, I hear everybody singing. Like, well, that's not the actual audio from that evening. Or, you know, the people in front seem to be really worshiping. Like, were they told to do that? Were they self-selected? Which unfortunately is the norm, that the people in the front are chosen based on how well they'll respond. And so we then try to emulate that, believing it was live, but it wasn't. And so then it causes all of these issues that we've been running through in our bad systems, right? And so we then don't get the results in our live setting at our churches. We're like, well, this works so great at the conference. This works so great at the worship night or the concert or on this video that seems to be doing well. And so then we're like, ah, man, we're not as good as those people are. And so then we then have an unfortunate tendency to be like, all right, well, let's try and figure out what they're doing. And then we find out oh, okay, it was faked. Oh, they're playing with multi-tracks and they're doing all of these other things. And you're just like, oh, okay, well, I don't know that I'm comfortable with that, but that's what they're doing and I want it to sound good. And so then people start adding in multi-tracks from the recording. And part of it is they're trying to replicate the recording, thinking that they're going to get the results that they got on the recording, but those results were never real. And so then in by trying to do it that way, it causes a bunch of mistakes from a leadership standpoint and a spiritual standpoint. But yet we're like, I want it to sound like it sounded. And if it sounded like it did then we'd get the results that they got. And none of that's true. And we end up making terrible decisions. Again, limited by our cycle of pride, where we aren't as good as we want it to be. We then try to do something to make it that way until we feel like it should be. We're looking for acceptance. And then if somebody gives us that acceptance, then it just makes us want to do it again and again. And if anybody says anything against that, then we will attack them and be angry with them, which unfortunately is often me, because I feel like the Lord's telling me to share these things with people. And then they are not so nice to me about it. Because why? Because I'm coming against that difference of where they want to be and where they are. And that just kind of opens up this gaping wound of insecurity. And pride is often just an overcompensation for that insecurity. And when I take away that thing that they're using to cover that, then all they feel exposed, and then they'll do whatever it takes to get back to that place, right? So that may happen to you as we're having this conversation. But the thing is that's a very limited system. It's not like it doesn't work. It works a little bit. And so you're like, oh, well, it sounds so good. I'm like, well, it sounds better. You sound about the same. And then the question is, are you getting the results that you were hoping to get? Or are you now like tied to, well, I have to use these things. And are you in a bad system where you don't even know if you're on or off? And it unfortunately creates a bunch of side effects. So I have very little good to say about using multi-tracks in worship. And as I went through last week and talked about how do we make that stereo to mono conversion, I was using a multi-track. And there's so much that you can learn from those multi-tracks and being able to see what each instrument is doing and know about music and all the different things. And I made the comment that this is the only thing that they're good for. And I could feel it even in the moment, being like, I could probably just offended some people or made them wonder what it is that I'm talking about. Because a lot of times the tracks will be what I would call a limited system, meaning that it works to some extent, but it actually is holding you back. And so when we get in these moments, these are some of the hardest to get past, because you kind of have to let it go and go a different direction. And the challenge is that you can't go a different direction unless you let some of those things go. And then ultimately what ends up happening is we create all of these bad systems based on these limited things that were created that were never real in the beginning. And then what ends up happening is that everybody's up there on stage doing what they think is best and is going to help them achieve what they hear in their brain. And they're feeling that through their in-ear monitors and all this. They're like, oh, this is what we were thinking it would be. And people say, oh, worship sounded so good. So it's triggering that cycle. And you end up getting trapped in that cycle. And what, from our standpoint of our discussion about getting turned off, is that you end up turning yourself off because you're putting all of these tracks, these multi-tracks, into this environment where there's already too much sound. And so you get too much sound into a limited space, and then the sound person has to start making choices on who's going to get turned up, who's going to get turned down. Do I want to put in the perfectly tuned and completely perfect tracks, or do I want to let Bob or Cynthia or whoever else is playing these instruments, do I want to have them play? And the answer will almost always be the tracks are going to be better. And so what ends up happening is people are going to get turned down, if not completely off, although they don't know it because they have that bad system for their monitoring. And so they can hear themselves and they're living the Guitar Hero dream, unaware that they're being turned off at the soundboard. And so the people in the congregation think it sounds good. They come to that person later and say, oh, wow, it sounded so good. And that person thinks, oh, I sounded great. But that's not what they mean, and most average person can't tell whether or not tracks are being used or not. And so they think, and they become what I would call self-deceived, in that they think that they're sounding good when in reality they're not even on. They're not actually even a part of the team. They're essentially actors up on stage pretending to be part of the worship team. And that's a sad situation to be in. And unfortunately, that happens so much at churches. And again, it's a limited system, meaning there's only so many songs that you can choose. You're limited by their orchestration. You're limited by the order of those things. And it's all just kind of based on things that were never true. And so again, what happens in this limited system is by using those things, you then stop doing the things that would get you past them. And so a lot of people use multi-tracks. They're like, well, I don't have a bass player. And so I what am I going to do? I want to have that. And so they just add the bass player in through the multi-track. And so I always ask people, well, do multi-tracks help you get more bass players? And the answer is no, they replace your bass player. And so you just turned off a bass player completely, in the sense of like, you didn't even create it. Or if somebody came to your church, I won't attend a church that uses multi-tracks. Why? Because I don't want to be a part of that. And so you just took me off your team just by using them. And you're like, well, that's an interesting thought. I thought all professional music, like, no, like, I don't want to do that. And so that may be a new thought, right? But you're completely turning off musicians. And so what then ends up happening is you don't get good at finding new musicians, or you don't get good at making new musicians. And so, the Bible says to go in all the world and make disciples. And I say that all the time to people, because it's not go and find disciples. It's not go and put out an advertisement and say, hey, we're looking for disciples. You go and you make disciples. And so bass is super easy to play. And you really want, because of our mono conversion that we've talked a lot about, you want somebody who's a basic bass player to be a part of your team. And so I go to churches all the time, and I can look you in the eye and say, it is so easy to make bass players. And you just find people who have two fingers, at least one on each hand, and have some element of rhythm and have a willing heart. And they can be your bass player, as long as they have a bass and a cable, and all of that's important as well. But you're never going to get good at making bass players if you're constantly just quickly replacing them with a button on a machine, right? And so that skill of making disciples then begins to atrophy, because you're just looking for, okay, I'm only going to have these people, and then I'm going to fill in the rest. And so you get good at the technology, but you don't get good at making disciples. All right. The other thing that people will say, well, we're using it because we want it to be excellent. And I can understand how that comes, and you do want it to sound good. I don't want it to sound bad. But at the same time, if you're just putting the tracks in there and you're turning the people off, which is usually what happens, is it doesn't change how people play or that they play better. It just means that they get turned off. Well, you're not actually learning the skills of how to sound better as a group. You're just putting those tracks in and then, again, turning the humans off. And so it becomes in this weird way of like deception, in the sense of your people think that it's you, but it's not you. And so I definitely crosses a moral boundary for me when people do that, right? And again, that's just pride, and calling it what it is, it's pride that people, I'm not as good as I want it to sound, and so let's put this in here, I'll make it sound as good as we want to, and that will be, it's for the people, we want them to have an environment. And I feel like that's a net loss, in the sense of like, yes, it sounds better, but you're crossing that line into deception, in the sense of you're deceiving your people into thinking that you're something that it's not, right? And so I have seen people use tracks with that where it's more obvious, right? And it's not, and they'll say, hey, let's start that track. And so they've let their people know, like, hey, we're playing two tracks. Well, okay, then we no longer have the deception element. But most people use tracks with some element of deception. And if you were to say, hey, it sounded really good, thanks, yeah, we're pretty good. And I've had people come up to me and be like, look, I would put our worship team against any worship team in the country. Like, we're pretty good. And first of all, I say, well, it's not a competition, right? There's no American Idol for worship teams. And I hope there never is, because that would be, I think, not what the Lord would have us do. But if you're using tracks, that's not you, right? And I think there's this weird thing that happens where people associate themselves with that. Like, no, like, I'm playing with it, I'm good. As like, that's not you. And that's where we start to come into what I would call self-deception, where it's so become a part of like, this is how it's done and this is what we do and I sound better when I use these things, that we've disassociated like that's professional people who made this album in some other place and I'm like associating myself with that and then now I'm that good. And that it's a weird phenomenon that we have as people that we do that. But I feel like the Lord's saying like, it's not good. Like, and it definitely holds us back from becoming any better because we already feel like we're good. And that's the where we get stuck in that cycle of pride, is it keeps us from getting to where we want to go. So if you can do tracks without being deceptive, that's certainly better than being deceptive about it. But it also then prevents you from learning how to orchestrate. Or you'd be like, well, I don't have 7 guitar players. And as I showed you in the last episode, you don't need 7 guitar players in your live environment because you won't even be able to hear maybe 1, maybe 2 of them, right? But you don't know that because you haven't spent the time studying or pushing further into that, because you just push it on the recording that's all time aligned and sliced and done all the things edited to make it sound. And then you just put it up there and it sounds good and you don't exactly know why. Well, that keeps you limited, right? And then the other thing is that you then can't really then learn about the various leadership aspects of how do I change the song to better fit the moment or my congregation? How do I reorchestrate this in a different way that's going to, you know, reach the people that I'm trying to reach? Well, you can't do that because you're limited by, well, these are the tracks that are on the recording and I can only go so far with those. And then this is the tempo. These are, you know, some of them you can like have it repeat the intro or go to the verse twice, but you can't go there. Like, that's limited. There's some ability, but it's not nearly as good as it could be in other ways. And so we found for us, like, there's the moments where we're following the Lord in like, hey, I want you to sing this part. Oh, sing that part again. Or, hey, you need to now sing this other part of this other song. Well, it's not that you couldn't theoretically do that if you knew ahead of time and created the whole thing to make it do that, but you're very limited in your ability to respond to whatever it is the Lord tells you to. And for us, like, those are moments that are highly effective from a leadership success standpoint of we're actually getting people to worship the Lord. We're flowing with God in our services to, I'm tied to what this producer that was hired by this church decided when they were in this thing, and it sounds good in this other environment. So again, I say all of this in love to say, for the most part, 90% of the time, tracks are not good, right? But yet that really bothers people. And part of it, you just gotta search your heart and in a sincere sense of like challenging you, why do you feel that way? Why are, if I'm saying this right now and you're upset, why is that? And the answer will most likely be because there's this insecurity on the inside of you of like, if I didn't have this, then it would just be me and I'm not good enough. And that's a real fear, and I have complete empathy for you and understanding of what that is. But at the same time, you're never going to get past that. It's always going to be this like hidden monster in your closet that's going to keep you from doing things and being as good as you'd like to be, because it's constantly being masked by these other things. If you're unwilling to let that and work on that, then it's you're never going to get past it. And so as we walk through some of the things that we're going to share about, okay, how do we orchestrate and how do we do these other things? Like, I feel like we had to have this conversation because so many people are not going to listen because they're just be like, oh, well, we're already good. Or like, I would just do that with a multitrack. But there's a problem, right? In that you're now participating in that deception. You're now not helping develop people. You're not growing yourself into these other things. And depending on how your other systems are set up, you may actually be self-deceived to think that you're a part of the team that you're not actually on, that everybody seems to like, right? So that's a lot. That's a lot to take in. And I totally understand if you're just like, yeah, Steve, I don't want to watch your videos anymore. But I hope that you'll come back and you'll stick with us. And that the Lord will show you some of the things that he's shown me. And again, no judgment on my stand. I've been through all of this and been tempted and have done quite a few of the things that I'm talking about negatively here. But I'm telling you, there's a better way. And I feel like the Lord's shown it to me, and I'm more than willing to share it with you. So stick with us in the episodes to come. If you need more information about us or other things that we do, head over to musicandministry.co, where we've got books, we've got videos, we've got articles, we've got all kinds of stuff that will hopefully help you do whatever it is that God's called you to do. So until next time, God bless.